So there is an everlasting question that our sages say has been around from the days of Abraham, perhaps earlier. I apologize for the cell phone being here, but I have to know when the pizza guy calls to go out and get it. I don't have much of a choice. There's an everlasting question about why there is pain in the world. The most extreme example of that is Avraham Avinu, who is told that his future is in Isaac, and then Hashem tells him, take him and bind him and offer him as a sacrifice on a mountaintop, and Hashem does not offer any explanations. And one of the recurring themes in Tanakh is the glaring silence, where Hashem puts people in scenarios and does not bother explaining to them, even though they are prophets. And when Abraham has his wife abducted, we know the end of the story that he's going to get her back, but he didn't have that privilege. When his wife was taken from him, to his mind, it was over. And here he was doing just what God told him, going down to Canaan, and then there's a famine. Ribbono Shalom, didn't you just tell me to come here? That's a legitimate question. You run the world, and Hashem doesn't say anything. And then Avram goes down to Egypt, and he loses his wife. So you didn't give me kids, and you promised me a future. You promised me wealth. I lost my assets. You promised me it'll be good for you. I came and there's a famine. I go down to Egypt, and you don't tell me a word about what's going on. You told me to come, but here, I'm here. You didn't say anything. So then, what do? I have a famine, and you don't bother explaining to me what you're doing. And now I go down to Egypt, and they take my wife. Ribbono Shalom, hello? I know you told me to come here. I wasn't fantasizing. Right? Doesn't Avram Avinu have a right to ask questions? And what we learn from Avram is that Avram didn't have answers. It's not like he knew. It's not like he could say, it's going to be all right. Good. It's a good life. No, it's not. Avram's at home crying. Sarah's in the castle crying. And he has no answers. So what do you do in such a situation? So you daven, and you hope for the best, and you do the best you can. And a day later, it works out nice, so we all remember the end of the story. But there's a day, there's a night, he goes to sleep at home, and his wife is not home, and no one's telling him she's coming back tomorrow. And for all he knows, that night, we know what's being happening to her in Pharaoh's palace. How's he supposed to sleep that night? Thank you for what?
You're supposed to say thank you every day, no matter what happens.
So I don't know if the term is thank you, it says.
If you do a personal prayer, you know, first you have to say all the good principles, and then you have to say thank you for all.
So we were discussing that Abraham does not know really what's going on when his wife is being abducted. And we were discussing that this is a recurring theme in the Tanakh, in the Bible, that Hashem puts man in scenarios where he has to deal, and he is not given the explanation in advance. There are commentaries that explain that when Moshe was told, "V'ra'ite et achorai," you'll be able to see me from behind, "Ufanai lo yera'u," but you won't be able to see the front. What he was being told is that part of the human challenge is that you will never be able to look at forward at time and say, I understand how God is running the world. You will only be able to look in hindsight and say, now I understand what God was doing there. Now, our sages say that when Abraham was commanded to bind his son, he did not understand why God was doing this. He had many questions. Why? You told me Isaac is my future. Why are you telling me this? The challenge is, can I live life where I don't understand the way God is running the world? And that challenge leads us to Moshe. Our sages say that Moses at Sinai, he has the greatest revelation, and he sees things are going great, and Hashem is giving him his wishes. So he says, okay, God, now I have a question. I see things are going great, so I really don't understand. Why is it that righteous people suffer? And wicked people seem to have it good. And sometimes wicked people suffer and righteous people seem to have it good. I don't understand. And Hashem says, yeah, good question. And then you read the book of Habakkuk, and our sages say Habakkuk witnessed the destruction of the temple, saw the suffering of his people, drew a circle in the sand, and said, God, I'm not leaving till you answer me. So you see, great people like Habakkuk also had a question. So he's a prophet. God's talking to him. And he says, God, I don't understand. How is it that the wicked are making the righteous suffer? They're more wicked. They're more righteous than they. And then we finally reach a book that's written just on this topic, the book of Job. And all you see is arguments back and forth. And who wins in the end? Job. Job says, no, none of your answers hold water. Until finally, the youngster, the small friend, gives him some sort of answer, which is not even enough. And until God comes to the scene, and the book ends with the message, you don't understand, but I'm following exactly what's going on here. It's not coincidental. And what the book is teaching us is many, many, many things. But one of the concepts is that our hardship and our challenge within the hardships of life is if we divide our philosophical world into two. There's the realm where I can understand God created a world, gave me a system to work with, sometimes even gave me specific commandments, like in the case of Abraham, he told him what to do. So there's that realm. Then there's the realm where I have to deal with things that are happening in life, and God is not intervening, and I don't understand how things are playing themselves out. So those are two realms. But when I'm dealing with realm number two, I am very tempted to have that challenge my belief in realm number one, even though the two are not connected. But when I don't understand what he's doing in my life, and I don't understand why I'm suffering, and I don't understand why children are suffering, and I don't have answers for a lot of things that are going on here, then that brings me to a point where I challenge what I knew in point number one. Wait a second, you created the world, you run the world, you gave a system to the world. Didn't you tell me Isaac was my future? Sure, you told me Isaac was my future. I wasn't hallucinating. So didn't you tell me to bind him? I wasn't hallucinating then either. So isn't that a contradiction? So now the question is, does the fact that I don't understand how life is playing itself out, does that bring me to the point where I deny the points that I've been able to establish? Are the two connected? So we're very tempted to connect them. It's very tempting, but logically they're not connected, but emotionally, sure they are. Emotionally, why should I listen to you? The most glaring case of that is Avraham Avinu. You told me he's my future, you told me to bind him. I don't understand you. Am I supposed to obey? It's even harder because, as the Ran explains, God didn't tell him, you have to bind Avraham. God told him, could you please do it? Notice the word please in the beginning, sort of saying, you don't have to. So then it's really tempting. Notice the word please in the beginning of the conversation. A clear indication, you don't have to. If I don't have to, so, wait a second. So maybe not. So we live a life where we have answers. But all the answers leave us with a question. The concept of Nichum Avelim, the concept is, you're visiting the person and you're helping them deal with the hardship, that hardship. That's why we learn many of the concepts of Nichum Avelim from the book of Job. Isn't Job a philosophical book? Yeah, but that's exactly what's supposed to happen in Nichum Avelim. So the person sits there and he says, he lost a relative. And he says, how am I going to deal with that? And then you come and help the person, you share the pain, and you help them understand that even though things are painful, that does not really contradict everything else. So what happens at the end of the book of Job? God says to Job, I've been following everything. And I'll explain to you what happened here. And then three chapters of explanation. And then God says, you got it? And Job says, I'm scared to say I didn't, so I won't. But he's saying, I didn't, right? I didn't understand. But Job says, now that I understand, you've been following everything that's going on in my life. Even though I don't understand you, I can live with it. And with that, Job is revealing to us the great hardship we have. Because when we encounter those hardships, we're tempted to say, you're not following what's going on here. When Job says to God, I don't understand you, but now I can handle life, because now I know it's not coincidental, you're following what's going on in my life, Job is giving us the tools to deal with life. So the whole book ends with without an answer? No, the whole book ends with God gives him an answer, but he can't understand it. And that's what God says to Moshe Rabbeinu also. You want to understand the world, look backwards, don't look forwards. You want to understand, I have a system and you don't understand it. Right, I didn't give you the capacity to understand it. And that's the great challenge in life. You know, we can discuss it easily here. I always say these discussions have to be held in the oncology ward of a child who's 3 years old. Now go talk to me about pain. All the answers, talk to me there. Don't talk to me anywhere else. So when you have an answer for that, then I'm willing to hear it. All the other answers, okay, so there are two types of answers. There's an answer you could prove philosophically, and then there's an answer you could work with in life. So philosophically, the Mishnah says that all the answers leave you at a point where you say, I hear it, but I don't hear it. I hear it, but I don't. I don't have a handle on it. Ein bigadenu, the Mishnah says. You don't have a handle. All the answers leave you at a point where it doesn't sit perfect. It's not a perfect fit. I hear the answer, but I'm not finished. I don't feel like you've answered me completely. And yet, the answers give us perspective. So from a philosophical perspective, we're always left with that challenge. Am I going to look at the hardships of life and therefore say, forget it? Or am I going to say, they're two separate things. I don't understand how God runs the world, but I do understand that he exists. I do understand he gave us a Torah. I do understand he gave us a system. I do understand I have to adhere to it. The challenge is when we're faced with reality, not to contradict what we've developed. Because we can't, we will not have an answer that encompasses all the sides. We can have, once we've really accepted the tenets of Judaism, and once we've understood there's a God, he created the world, he's watching what's going on here, he gave us commandments, he has a system even though he doesn't reveal to us how he's going to run the world, he's given us responsibility and a system to work within this world. Once I have that, if I've proven that, then I can also adopt the attitudes that that system teaches me. But there's a difference between an attitude and a proven philosophy. And what the Torah gives us is attitudes. It gives us a proven philosophy on all the other points. But when it comes to go deal with the hardships of life, so then like Nachmanides says, can you really prove that there was a life before, that there's going to be a life after? You can prove the Torah is true, and then you could say, okay, the Torah told me. So that's what I'm saying. There are things you can, once you've developed that, the understanding of the truth of Torah, the truth of our tradition, then you can look in the Torah and the Torah can teach you attitudes. How am I supposed to deal with this? But you see that Aaron loses his two sons and it's considered greatness that Aaron says nothing. Can he be silent? That's a greatness of Aaron. It says, wait a second, isn't that obvious? No, it's not obvious. The man just lost his two sons. But he's the Kohen Gadol. He's not a kid. He's 83. Right. And even so, that's considered greatness. The ability to be silent. The ability to stand there and not be upset with his creator. So that means it's not to be taken for granted. It is human nature to be hurt, to be upset. And we work on it our whole life, that balance. Can I deal with the pain and not come to the point where I say, okay, that contradicts the other things that logic has developed. Now, as far as the attitude, okay, so once we understand there's an afterlife, so then what happens in this world has a different perspective. If all I see is this world, that was part of Job's hardship, because if Job only saw this world, so then what's going on here? If the whole question is pleasure or pain in this world, success or lack thereof in this world, so then it's very hard to live with life. But the second the Torah reveals to us there's an afterlife, there's more to life, this is just the beginning, it's not the end, so then I can deal with it. Again, these are attitudes. This is already a different realm, if we're going to divide it from what we can prove philosophically, and after we've proven that, what we're taught from that. And you know, you've learned enough that you know there are numerous approaches that help us deal with it. But one of the central ones is the idea that this is just a part of the game, what we're seeing here, a small part of the game. Okay, so that's for starters. I think there's much more to discuss, but we've covered a lot that needs to be thought about. You know, it's a tough...